Here, let's see, agenda item number 13, public hearing pertaining to oyster harvests. Oh, careful.
Okay, gave a fairly good briefing last meeting, so I'm just going to kind of hit the highlights of it at this one, since we have been through it once before, but just for the audience to get caught up. We obviously have been in a good run with our harvest over the past 10 years or so. Public has gone up, private especially has gone up. And we saw coming for this past season that there would be a somewhat of a small dip in harvest. And so we had some warnings about it last year and started working on discussions on effort. And what we'll be talking about, we're talking about the effort that comes from our two most efficient gears, and that's the hand scrape and the dredge that work in a lot of areas of the bay. That they allow us to catch oysters at relatively low densities, and they're relatively easy to use and easy to gear up for. So we have seen this rapid increase in the fishery at the same time that we are seeing the increase in the harvest. And so when you look at our all-gear user fee, which is what a waterman has to have in order to get any gear, as we've looked at that over the past 3 years, gone from 660 to 900 something, don't know what it'll be in this year, but it's looks like it'll be at least as high as it was in 15 or could be slightly higher, because we didn't really react to it till kind of middle of the spring, and we still had some more user fees that were bought prior to a freeze.
Commissioner.
Yeah.
Where's he?
Taking a break.
Ms. Finland, Commissioner.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the issue. We just got a letter dated August 17, 2016, from Delegate Gordon Hessel. He's asking for a 60-day continuance to allow him an opportunity to represent the Virginia watermen and to have time to review and understand implications of such management. I think we might need to rule on this continuance before we have a presentation.
I agree.
And I just got this letter.
We all just got it.
I would wait until he gets back. So maybe we just take a little breaky poo here or something.
10 minutes.
Like a 10-minute adjournment or something.
You have the gavel.
Okay. We're going to adjourn for 10 minutes until Commissioner Bull returns.
There you go.
I can't see him doing it.
Recess is over.
Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Cedra.
While you were out, we were given several handouts, and one of which is a letter dated August 17, 2016, from a delegate, Gordon Hessel, asking for a 60-day extension on this matter that's before the commission right now to have an opportunity to review and understand the implications of such management and to also represent the Virginia watermen. I bring this to the commission's attention not to grant a 60-day continuance, but to rule on to consider his request, whether we approve it or not. And if we approve it, then we put a time limit on it, and then at that time we would have a presentation rather than going through the presentation right now and then giving the guys some time.
Well, let me add a little bit of information here that may help clarify this a bit. I sat down with Delegate Hessel for 3 hours last week. We discussed a wide variety of issues involving commercial fishing, commercial oystering, commercial crabbing, and we discussed the future and the current. And he expressed that he has received calls and contacts of concern with the possibility that the commission would act to reduce the daily bushel limit in the wake of having so many participants in the oyster fishery, in the public oyster fishery. He expressed great concern that reducing the daily bushel limit would in fact make it impossible for anybody to earn a living, especially if it's reduced to 4 bushels per day from the 8. I explained to him the staff recommendation that would be forthcoming today here for this limited entry plan and license reduction through attrition. I have also briefed Delegate Bloxham from the Eastern Shore on this. Delegate Ransom has been briefed on this as well. Delegate Keith Hodges in Gloucester as well. Most of the delegates and senators who represent tidal areas have been briefed on what the staff recommendation and the recommendation of the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee is. I believe I can reflect accurately that Delegate Helsel's biggest concern was the idea of reducing the bushel limits, and I explained that that is not the staff recommendation, and at that point he just said, well, I want this on the record, signed this, and he handed this to me. Okay. So make of that what you will, but I think I can accurately represent that Delegate Helsel was most concerned about the idea of reducing the daily bushel limit to a point where people could not earn a living with 4 bushels a day. So I note that his request was to pretty much delay things for 60 days, but that actually puts us into the oyster season. I also know that there's been lots of rumors out there in the oysterman community here that VMRC is going to cut the daily bushel limit, nobody could make a living, and all sorts of other permutations on what very bad people we are. I would not vote to support reducing the daily bushel limit if there is any other option. I believe the staff has another option. Let's continue with the briefing.
I agree. We've just considered the letter and continue.
We're not at the public comment period here for this. Please continue, Dr. Wesson.
So along with the increases in the user fee, which allows any waterman that buys a user fee to use any gear, we've seen the pretty dramatic increase in the amount of hand scrapes and dredges. And now in this past year, we've seen a big jump, like 6-fold increase in patent dogs. Last year, We anticipated the season going down, and it's in our two areas that are still remain relatively strong, the Rappahannock and the James. The harvest remained relatively similar to the year before. Really big decrease in Mobjack versus what had been in York, and a really big decrease in Tangier Pokemon. Had we not had that extra season that we added where we allowed 9 and 10, it would have been an even more dramatic decline in the harvest. And when you look at the total harvest on the left and you compare the 2 years, we had about 85% of the harvest in 14-15 come from the dredges and scrapes. And then this past year, only about 70% came from it. So what we saw is that we actually had a little bit of movement into like the patent tong and more into hand tonging, and it made up a little bit of the difference that we saw in the decline in the hand scrape and the dredge areas. These are the areas that are going to be open this year, or at least proposed to be open. The Rappahannock should, we'll show that later on, should still hold up, but we still have areas that are going to be very low, Tangier, Pocomoke, and New York, compared to what we saw 2 years ago, and that's because we had 4 spat sets in 13 and 14. In New York, we had a decent spat set in 15, not so good up in Tangier Pocomoke, so we'll be dealing with that one for a while. Just making a prediction like we did last year, You know, the James should hold up, maybe a little bit down based on the smalls we have this year. And the Rappahannock should be about the same, but there'll be a little decline in the Great Wicomico and pretty big decline in Mobjack, York, the rotation we have there from what we saw in 14-15. And it'll be very low again in Tanger Pocomoke. Just to discuss the gear, this is what the bottom looks like. This is what, before you get to it, before you put a dredge down, you see that the washers are in their habitat, in the bottom, attached with all other creatures. And then the gear that we use is a scrape. It's a hand scrape or a dredge. It pulls through it and pulls them out, cleans them up, and puts them on board so that you can harvest through any of the calls, and you put them back overboard. So it's, no matter how you look at it, it's a pretty destructive process, and it has to be done carefully in regulation in order to keep from doing just wholesale damage. And just, we did some work last year to try to really nail this down and exactly what harvest does. And on the left here in Mobjack is where we, and before we started harvesting, we had seen almost 150 spat per meter. After the season was over, in order to catch this small amount of orchards here, the number of spat per bushel was down to less than 20. In the area that we didn't harvest last year, it actually went up because it actually goes up because you can actually see ones later that you couldn't see when we went and looked at it in November. And this held through for all the hand scrape areas. This is Great Wicomico. You can see the spat before the harvest, spat after the harvest. You know, we're targeting the green. We're targeting the markets, but the other sizes get hurt in the process. This is in Tangier, the spat set that we had prior to harvest versus what was left after harvest. This is in Rappahannock and Temple Bay area. And then just looking at the spat in the James River before and after harvest. And one of the things that always comes up is, you know, that in the process of doing this harvest that we're working the bottom, we're cultivating the bottom, but in all the cases that we look at, there are less shells per meter when we leave an area after we've done the dredge and the hand scrape than it was when we began. And because you don't really pull up shells, because the problem with our shells is that they're dissolving and they're going away. They're not, and a few go in the bottom, and you can pull a few of them out. But we're so depauperate in shell on most of our bars, when you look at a per meter quantity, that a lot of time the major part of our culch there is the live washers. So when you take live washers out, you automatically remove some of the culch, and that's just part of the process. And we don't build back orchards fast enough to return the culch to the same place it was at the beginning of the season. So that falls into when we discuss how we reshell areas. Between Roger Mann and our group, we work together to do the stock assessment on the number of orchards. We also do stock assessment on the shell at the same time. And we've been in a situation since 2013 where we've had the highest amount of money for shelling that we've ever had. But at the same time we've had the money and it's been stable at a high level, we've also been seeing the cost of the shells go up. And so actually what we put on the ground is going down, the amount that we actually get on the bars. So as an example, this year we had almost 1,400 acres that needed shell added back, and we could only afford to get back about 500 acres, put shell back on about 500 acres. So we are constantly dealing with not enough shell, and so it's so important to control effort, because we depend on spat set, which can be damaged in the process, and we depend on the shell, as well as obviously the broodstock for doing the spawning. And if we continue to have our shell disappear, that in order to protect the long term of the industry, we've got to have the fishery in control. So, you know, we had talked about all these things, and we have two ways of doing effort control. We can either, as what we're just talking about, this thing that we don't want to do, is we can control what each person does, or we can control the number of people. And when you talk about what each person does, that's the really bad thing about reducing catch effort, less than the daily amount, less than it is today. And we know from talking to SMAC that we're as low as we want to go. That's not even something we want to start talking about. We really don't want to change our season lengths a whole lot because it makes interruptions in the market between keeping Virginia oysters coming all the time. You know, shortening the day is a problem, and there's some we talked about the possibility of quotas for individuals, but all of you know that keeping up like the striped bass quota is very time-consuming for staff, and if you did this for oysters, which is now bigger, and we had to tag every basket, and we had to monitor this every day, we just don't think we would have staff to do that. So where we're left is trying to reduce the number of licenses, and that's what we've been working on with the commission and the Shellfish Management Committee for 2 years. And if you recall, last year, we worked with the industry because what their concern was is that how can we lower the industry by getting rid of the zeros of people that have licenses and don't do anything, and how can we get rid of the part-timers? And that's what we presented to the commission last year. You know, we had 409 for hand scrapes as an example, and 194 that worked less than 20 days, which we considered as part-timers. And so we had made recommendations to the commission of removing these 600 people from the hand scrape fishery, and which would only impact 9% of the harvest, but it got a big part of the people in the fishery out. And we did the same thing for dredges. And we passed that at the commission, and there was a lot of grumbling to legislators and everything. People weren't satisfied with it. They didn't understand it. They didn't like the fact that they couldn't go back and forth between gear types. If they lost one gear type, they didn't necessarily lose the other gear type, and they couldn't go back and forth. So basically, we reversed that decision, and staff was sent back to work with the SMAC to come up with another strategy for effort control. The obvious thing that we had in our tools was the fact that the commission had passed a control date in July 1st, 2014 that said, right in black and white or in red here, that if you bought your user fee after July 1st, you would be not considered. You would be out of it, and we wouldn't have to consider it for any decisions. And if you just look at that number basis, the 1,124 that we have now, we had 742 before the control date, 382 that came in after. And so we started working with SMAC on that issue. And you look at these, this is a group of people that came in after the control date. They're 24% of the harvest, and this little group here, the ones that worked the most, caught 23% of the harvest. And so many people on the committee knew people that were going to be impacted with this that basically we just made no headway with moving forward with the control data at all. We just could not get consensus. This is the rest of the fishery, amongst everybody, on how we would control the fishery. In our analysis of the fishery, this little piece of information was relatively interesting here, that you know, you could actually see that the ones that harvest the most bushels is dropping down, and the fishery is kind of moving to the center, and that's just a sign of there's more pieces of the pie being divided up. The pie is the same, more little pieces, and so the catch in the year is going down or moving to the center. So after we had done that, even though we really didn't have very good support on it, they wanted to know, well, how would we do a effort control using a control date? And it was pretty cut and dry that the 382 that were out would be out, that came in after the control date. And to get back in, they'd have to either have an immediate family transfer, or we actually offered up the option they could buy from from people that are transfer from people that had 40 days of harvest that they could document. And this just did not go with the SMAC at all. So we were kind of at a point where we had to start rethinking about other potential choices. And the other thing that the commission had done this past February, when we began working on Africa Control again, in order to stop the potential of people coming in and buying licenses just to put them in their pockets so they would not be caught in this thing, as we talk about it, the commission put a freeze on the user fee in February, said that we wouldn't have any more user fee sales until after we had, you know, worked through this issue. We would be dealing with it right now. We also did one thing that we, to try to help people that wanted to do just seed oysters, that we've since found was probably not allowed, and that we allowed, saying that on May 1st, we would let people buy an oyster resource user fee to just do seed, because that's the only time that the seed season is open. But the code's pretty clear that if you had a user fee, you would be in, and we wouldn't. If anybody had taken us up on that, which they did not, they would probably be in the fishery to add to the 1,124 that we have now. So using that freeze, we came up with another scenario of voluntary attrition for the fishery that may take a while, but we're saying that hold the number where you are with that freeze. If you don't buy your user fee, then you're out. For this first year, we're actually extending that. We're saying if you had a user fee in 13, 14, 15, or 15, 16, you're already in, but you would actually have until to get back in, you got till April 30th of 2017 to buy it and be in the fishery. So all 1,124 people would be covered, and they have an extra four-month grace period that kind of is in line with getting their commercial card. But then after that, if they don't rebuy it by January 1st of the following years, they will be out. We won't let any new sales occur until we hit 600. Once we hit 600, then we'll have some sort of lottery system that any commercial fisherman can apply for. And then until that time, the only way you can get an oyster user fee will either immediate family transfers, or you would have to transfer some somebody that could document that they had 40 days of activity. And the reason we picked the 40 days is because we kind of looked at the number of days and the number of people, and we don't want to let people that have no activity let somebody in that would start being active. We're trying to get the effort down. And so we have about 400 people that work 40 days, and that seemed like a reasonable amount of time to declare yourself as being serious in the industry. And so those people that have 40 more days will be allowed to transfer their licenses to somebody. Now, before I go on, that's basically where we ended up on Africa Control. If there are any questions on that before I finish up on the rest of it, before we have a public hearing, do you have any questions on the Africa Control?
I just want to be clear about the immediate family transfer, since we discussed that at SMAC, and who you envision that being.
In the household.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Jim, just so that I'm sure, the 40 days of harvest in the previous year for eligibility for transfer in the future, is that intended to conserve this for full-time oystermen?
Not really. It's to give some value to the full-time waterman and what he's doing, that he would be able to transfer and actually get something for it, as opposed to opportunistic person that's just sitting on a license with 0 days harvest or 2 days harvest, and then he wants to go sell his license, and then we get the more effort than we want.
Mr. France.
Yeah, that the user fee, that will not entitle everybody that paid it to get in
any oyster fishery they want. Or will
it?
It will.
So yeah, you can do it. We're working on a user fee, so any waterman, once he's in, he can do anything he wants.
Tong dredge,
hand scrape. We're not doing anything with the gear types.
Mr. Hurst.
I wonder if there was any thought given to the last bullet point about the 40 days of activity in the previous calendar year, whether or not there would be, we did not discuss this at SMAC, but what about the previous calendar year or possibly the previous two calendar years? For example, you know, somebody's continually been in the fishery and demonstrated that they're a full-time waterman, but for one reason or the other, they were not active in the previous calendar year. A hardship, which I know you cover, but let's say they were in another fishery.
I don't think we would want those. If you're just in another fishery, you made a decision to do that, and that, you know, we already have it for, you know, there are medical exceptions that we can do. Somebody's out because they have a medical issue, and I mean, you know, right now that this is happening, and if between the time this regulation goes into effect and say December. The end of December, you'd be working on your 2015 numbers. But you have enough time now that if you want to be serious about it and you want to sell your license, you got October and December to work and build up your 40 days, and then you'd be able to sell your license.
I just thought it might add a little more flexibility, you know, to some of the people that were looking to get out of the fishery, that it wouldn't have to just be the previous calendar year. It could go back maybe two calendar years or something. But allow more of the younger generation the opportunity to get into fishery, which, you know, at SMAC we had two things that we were interested in: preserving the full-time waterman, allowing the younger generation to get in that may want to. So, just a thought.
Yeah, but I mean, I just want to make sure you understood on this before I went into just finishing out the season dates and all that kind of stuff, but on the question. So
the exceptions would be for military service, active duty, or for medical hardship document.
Yes.
The other 40 days, that would be
mandatory
reporting.
And they'd have to document buyers.
They would have to document they would have to provide the buyer's tickets. So there would be no coming in and say, yeah, I just forgot to put that on my harvest report. I actually harvested 95 days.
That's right.
Right.
And for clarification, that 40 days can be 20 days of tong and 10 days of hand scraping and 10 days of dredging.
Yeah, I mean, that's not just in the, you know, you can tong some of it, you can hand scrape some of it, you can pat dog some of it, you can dredge part of it. It's 40 days of mandatory reporting.
Any other questions?
And even with an all-gear user fee, it would even be you wanted to work by hand on Seaside because you have the right to do all that.
So under this concept, under your proposal here that's been vetted by SMAC here, nobody would lose a license except by their own choices.
That's right. And this did pass 10 to 2 at SMAC.
Any other questions about this aspect? Please continue.
All right. So just to kind of finish up on everything, this is kind of the easier part, is that these are the harvest dates, and it's similar to all the other years. The two areas that are opening in the Rappahannock are Area 4 is opening first. We have stock assessment on that. The red is what we're after, but the good thing is that 2015 we saw a nice bump in spatset in this area, and they're big enough now that they won't be hurt much by the fishery. And there was a request on this one that it opens in October. Normally we do them October or November, 2 months in a row, and there was a request that in SMAC that we split it, and so it'll be October in for Area 4, and then it'll reopen in December. So and we have that. That's been advertised. The next area that's going to open will be Area 2. There's probably not quite as many market oysters in Area 2, but it did have the good spat set, so it'll be okay, but it won't be as good as Area 4. Now, for Tangier and Pocomoke, the area that was open last year was Area 1, which is the purple here or whatever that color is. What is scheduled to open this year is Area 2, which is in two parts as it is set up right now. This part in Tangier Sound, this part in Pocomo. When we started doing the rotation areas in 2007, you know, working with the industry and working with Roger Mann, and this was all very new, and we basically started two tracks because we didn't know how to work. I mean, we picked 3 years based on the fact that takes about that long for an orchard to get to be a market size, and it also takes about that long for them to get heavily diseased. So they could, you know, you're trying to catch something before it goes. But we started a two-year rotation in Tangier Sound. It was different. The area didn't divide up as well then as some of the other areas. And so we've been monitoring these areas both for harvest and management reporting as well as our stock assessment for that entire time. But all the areas have been maintained similarly. Generally, Tangier and Pocomo, when you compare them to, as I'll show in a second, to the Rappahannock, where if you look at over here, the number of spat per meter, you know, we're in the, you know, 40s to, and then it'll jump up sometimes to higher amounts, where in Tangier, we used to see in the 40s when we started, but it's slowly over time it's been dropping down. And in a three-year rotation, you have 2 months of harvest out of every 36. So every area gets 2 years to sit and rest during spat set, during the time of recruitment, when the orchards cannot be drug around in the harvesting process and get big enough that they can escape what harvesting does to them, as well as you're not taking the markets out as fast. You're not taking them out every other year. As opposed to Tangier Pocomo in a two-year rotation, they get 3 months. They have a longer season. They have a three-month season. So they're 21 months. They only get 1 year to sit there untouched. When you get 2 years, and really 3 years, you have three shots at a good spat set, where when you get the 2 years, you only have two shots at it, and only one of them is going to be undisturbed. And it appears that the two-year rotation is not doing as well as the three-year rotation. We're down to in this area that's going to open, just like four oysters per meter for when we're going to start the season. When you look at the standing stocks in general for the bushels that are out there, the harvest has been going down pretty consistently since 2012. And so we've looked at it, and we know that this area is not too bad, this area in Tangier, but this area in Pocomoke is terrible. It's very little recruitment that we've seen out there now for 4 years. And this kind of shows that the differences between the two. If you just remember, this light blue is the Tangier side of Area 2, and the darker blue is the Pocomoke side. And this is a spat set. And, you know, we had two bad years everywhere in spat set that were down. But Tangier held up okay in the second year of that. And then it bounced back last year with a good spat set in this area. But in the other area, spat set has been 5 is very low to start with, and that looks like a good year for Pocomoke. And then these other years were down around 1 spat per meter, and you can't even measure the amount of spat per meter that we had in 2015. And the consequence of that is that there are a few market orchards in Tangier Sound, but there's almost none in Pocomoke Sound. And, you know, we have to have some sort of brood stock in order to get any kind of recruitment in these areas for the future. So we're suggesting that we actually, if you were just thinking about stock assessment, the whole area ought to be closed this year. I mean, we're so low in the whole area, 4 in our good area per meter, and almost nothing in the other. But we're recommending that we rearrange this and make this start a three-year rotation to see if that will improve the situation in Tangier and Pocomoke, with Area 2 being open this year, and then Area 3 basically will not be open this year. It would have been part of Area 2 the way it was previously, and then y'all are just going to have to wait and see what it looks like next year on what we have to work with there.
I like the way you said y'all.
We also had a request from industry to open a little area in Yocomico called Palmer's Rock. We've added that. There's very little spat set in this area, so you're gonna have something out there this year to catch, but unless we go back and put seed there, it won't be sustainable, but it's all right. So that's the changes in the season. We're going to hold the Friday off. The SMAC was in favor of that, because everybody is in until until April of 2017, but everybody's in for certain until the first of the year, and then we'll see if some people start dropping out on their own, which we think that they will. So this is our recommendations for how it will read for the moratorium, that if you begin in February 23rd, only the individuals that have the user fee, you have to pay that user fee to stay in, and we're giving them to April 30th to pay the user fee, and then by January 1st of the following years. Should it drop below 600, then we'll have a random drawing to allow people back in. They can transfer in an immediate family, and they can transfer if they have 40 days. And then we have the statements in there in the case of death or incapacitation that the license can be transferred through one or two, and it will have the normal allowances for medical hardships and military leave. We're going to maintain the Friday off through December, add that little area in Yocomico, split the season in Rappahannock, and we're recommending that we subdivide rotation area 2 in Pocomoke Tangier into two sessions and begin a three-year rotation in that area. Any questions?
Any questions from the commission? Well, Mrs. Kellum first.
I was just wondering, SMEX votes on the season and area openings. Do we have a report from SMEC on that?
So are they approved the season yet?
They did?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Erskine.
Some of the discussion, Jim, at SMAC was surrounding this, the attrition, I guess, idea that not paying the user fee. There was some discussion about somebody that has a commercial registration but had not paid the user fee because they're on private ground. And there was a concern about being able to go and hand-tong James River seed areas.
We tried to put that exemption in last year, and it wasn't correct. And we've talked about that, and we've looked at possibilities without a code change. We can't do that because it says that in order to do any public orchard, you have to have this user fee, and we only have one user fee. We don't have a way to make two of them, one that's different for seed.
I see. Okay.
And there has been discussions with Mr. Hull about this issue.
Yes, we've been back and forth on what possibly could do. Whether the code also says that you can't harvest any public without one, mm-hmm. and then it specifically says if you have one, you can do every gear type. So we're caught on both ends on it that we didn't have any wiggle
room. Okay. All right. I understand. Thank you.
Other questions from the commission? Chief O'Reilly.
So I have one concern, and that is E. And a few of us spent a lot of time on Section 15, to say the least. But I do see that this is sort of a little bit wide open. and the commission and staff had a lot of experience with exceptions. Most of it not positive, but, you know, we have endured that. Here, you're looking at E, and it's that there can be exceptions to what was in B. Put B back up, Jim. So it's more or less a flat. If you can't meet what's in B, that you can get a medical exception or a military exception. And I think the way it reads now, that would mean someone could say that the reason they never had the user fee was because they had medical situations. And, of course, that would not be a great situation, but that's not something that's intended by this regulation. I think what's intended, and I'm just going to try this for the commission, if you look at E, exceptions to subsection B of this section shall only apply to those individuals who paid the Oyster Resource user fee in previous years and shall be based on documented medical hardships or active military leave that prevented the individual from fully satisfying the requirements of subsection B. So there, the idea is that it would be someone who had paid the Oyster Resource user fee, and even in the future, let's say 2017 or 2018, pays the fee, then has medical situations, and then surely that should be an exception on hardship. So there is a distinction there, and I'm at least wanted to bring that to the commission's attention.
No, I got that.
Okay.
I got that. Let me see if I can paraphrase that so everybody gets it. A medical hardship exemption has to be based on an explanation of why they did not purchase the user fee when they should have. Doesn't apply to something that might have happened years before. It's got to be pertinent and an acceptable excuse to have not purchased the user fee.
That's a great paraphrase, and in fact, that's what the commission did a year ago, July, with the commercial fishermen registration licenses. That if you have a medical hardship, it only applies to why you did not purchase the commercial fishermen registration license the year before. So it's in symmetry with that.
Does that need further explanation? I can say that I've seen a wide variety of medical hardship claims. Some of them are heartbreaking, and some of them are absolutely pertinent. But somebody that had a medical injury 5 years ago is not an explanation why they did buy a CRFL last year. Any other questions from the commission? Well, this is the plan that staff's presented after almost 2 years of work. Sure took a while to get to this point. This is a public hearing. I would imagine there's some people that wish to be heard on this matter. So raise your hand. Luck of the draw, I'll call you as I see you. Please come forward. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Freda Linton from Saxis. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for giving us the 16 days you gave us last year. Mr. West said we're in a delusion, and I guess we're still in a delusion because the officers that I thought I caught, I sold them. What I take as a delusion that we didn't catch them. I mean, that's the way I took it. But anyway, I want to thank you all for giving us 16 days. Another thing, we're going to have to work 40 days to keep our license. Now, he's talking about doing a three-year rotation. And
Wait, miss, let me clarify that. It's not working 40 days to keep your license. It's working 40 days in order for it to be eligible to be transferred.
Oh, okay. Sell it. Okay. All right. Well, how about he bought up by the decline in the oysters in the Pocomoke Sound. You all gave us 16 days to harvest the oysters. Couldn't that be why our harvest is down? Because you only gave us 16 days? because I think on his report, he says 16,000 bushels. I can come up with a whole lot more than that because I know how many boats were there. And you take 70 boats just with two cars now, 16 bushels to a boat, that would be 20,000 bushels. And a lot of us had three people on a boat, like me. That caught our limit about every day. And there it's a decline. I don't see it. Area 2 that he's talking about opening up, never have worked down there because there's nothing down there to work. And going in Tangier Sand, I'm not going to Tangier Sand because our boats is so, a lot of us, boats are so small, and you get in a storm, I've been there and done that too. But anyway, the area that he's closing down, a 3-year rotation, is that Shell Rock and these areas that we worked last year, there was a lot of small arses left on them rocks. And there was a lot of spats on these area 9 and 10 that we left also on 9 and 10. But he's talking about closing them areas and opening them no more. Well, we gave him area 11 that had never been opened in 30 years. We asked him, we'll give you that. Because you can get a bushel of lick right now. Either one of you on this board will come and go with us. The waterman now, not him. Somebody that, you know, he uses patent tongs. So I'm not saying anything against him. You go with us. And I guarantee you, and I'll pay you for your day's work just to go with us and show you, let you show it, be proof to you what we're saying is true. We're not calling nobody a liar, but you know, when we were over here last year, Mr. West got up and said, I think Mr. Bauer said, why haven't you been up there and checked these areas out? Well, after a while he did. Then he got up and he said there was no washers on 9 and 10. You all remember that? I do. I caught that. All right. When this guy here, the gentleman here, said, why not open it up and let him go, just let him go and see what's there? I think Mr. Bauer seconded it, and you all agreed to it. And then, right after you all done that, he got out right behind us after you closed the public comment and said, oh, I know they'll catch oysters. You all didn't catch that either? I did.
Let's not rehash the past. What would you like from here?
Well, I'm trying to make you all understand. I don't believe none of these reports are true. What he's saying? Another thing. All right, if you plant a garden and you harvest that garden every day and you take care of it, and some of you don't, who's going to harvest the most out of your garden? The one that takes care of it. Private owners work their grinds every day. Andy Drawer's got more strike on his grain and Don Porter, private owners, than the whole Pocomoke Sound. Why? They're not planting shells on their grain, but yet they got more strike because they're working the grain every day. That's what I believe in, too. Now, you might believe in something else, but that's what I believe. And the reason we're not getting our strike because our grain's not being working all the time. There ain't neither place right there right now that we couldn't catch 16 bushels in 4 hours. An area is 9 and 10. We're going to keep them closed. At all same time, not only is the marauders coming in and taking the oysters now, they're coming in and taking the whole rock and counting it over there and dumping it out. And I heard that a couple of them were caught. They got a little fine. That was it. And right back at doing it again. And have you figured out what these shells? We had strike on our frames down to Bird's Rock, high as 100 on a frame. But yet these shells that he planted had none. Well, the first thing I would question is the shells must not be no good. And then come find out he planted them on mud and had to pay somebody to take them up. Well, if he had a waterman that knew where the rocks were, they would have been on the rock, not on the mud. So say he won't take a waterman to come in and go out with him. He'll take somebody with book knowledge that go right there with him. But not one of us watermen know where all the rocks are. I don't need no GPS or nothing else. I know where every rock is in the Pocomoke Sound. Just by marks that I used to started patent tonguing when I was 14-year-old on my own. 14-year-old. We cleaned the shelves up back in the 60s. and every rot was worked. We have more strike in the 70s than ever been known. But yet, when you throw patent tongs overboard and just bring them up, you're just catching what's on top. And you have to...
Let's address the staff recommendations here and the issues that are at hand. There's other people that want to speak as sir.
In the patent tong and the issue that we use to, that he uses the patent tongs on the grain. I mean, that what he uses?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that ain't on the subject. That we can, the way we patent tong. I mean, it's a different just dropping them and bringing them up, unless you've got hydraulic tongs, than one that digs them in and then brings up more. But it's like I say, I disagree with all that he says about closing area 9 and 10 when we gave him area 11, and that he's not satisfied with that. He wants to take it all from us. You close that down, you might as well close the whole fucking magazine because we ain't got nothing to work on. And if we don't work in those days, because I'm not going away from home no more, I'm just going to stay home. So that's all I got to say. I just like for you all to think about keeping these areas open. Let us go to work, because we can catch 16 bushels easy on these areas. And there is strike on areas 9 and 10 and 11.
Thank you. Someone else?
State your name, sir.
My name is Scott Weibel from Eastern Shore.
You made this thing go full. I guess that's full screen. All right, what he was saying about the dirty shells, the people who work the private ground. Let me get to the one picture here. All right, so a dirty oyster shell will not strike on the outside, but the inside of the oyster shell is slammed full of oysters where it's clean, where it died. If we do not work these oysters, they will not strike. Now, his count says there's, 15 oysters per square meter up the Pocomoke Sound? There's 10 or 15 right there on that one shell. There's 4 or 5. There's a couple more. Is that not a pretty spat set? This is area 9 and 10. The very last day I worked area 9, I had my 24 bushel in less than an hour and a half. That's somewhere where oysters don't exist, supposedly. This is in an area that wants to be closed permanently. This is an area that would permanently kill Saxis. You are putting everybody out of work if them two areas don't open. Now, those areas are not that far from Shell Rock. You cannot tell me this bat did not strike on Shell Rock. These are oysters that struck last year. They had to strike on Shell Rock. When we left Shell Rock, we were shoveling 1 to 2 inch oysters overboard. Where did they go? If they don't exist, where did they go? That's all I want to say. Oh, yeah, and I got some pictures from other areas. Let's see what we got here. Let me go back. I didn't take very many pictures up the Rappahannock because I didn't know no better then. Oh, this is James River. Hold up. Wrong one. Got it backwards. No. Maybe it is right. October. Yeah, so this is up the Rappahannock where they got this amazing spat set. Doesn't look any different than up area 9 and 10, does it? And the James River, we all know the James River's got an awesome spat set, but it really doesn't look that different, does it? That's all I wanted to say.
Mr. Dyes?
I'll tear your computer up.
I'm Diane Dollars from Tangier Watermen's Association, and as far as the effort part, we're in favor of the proposed motion that staff has brought forth. Did I say in favor? I said in favor, didn't I? Yeah, we're in favor. But we are opposed to this proposal.
Let me write that down.
Go ahead. You better.
What's the date?
But we are opposed to this proposal, to splitting up the rocks in three areas. Don't mistake me. And everybody has their own opinion. We are for rotation. We love the two-year rotation, but we are not for three-year rotation. We've gotten into the mentality with all the press releases, with all the marketing that Virginia does, that we've become the oyster state, that if we don't get our limit by 9:30 in the morning, God is going to send the mountains and the heaven down on us, and we are no longer fit to be oystermen. It gets scary sometimes. It happens. It does not. If you have been doing this a while, scarce oystering, you might not like it, but it don't scare you. It's a part of it. There's cycles of it. It's how it's been. Last year, I caught my limit in the Tangier and Pocomoke Sound areas, the original ones that was open, just about up until the last day. Most days, at best, 12 o'clock. Some days, took me clean till 2. That's just the nature of the beast. Now, Jim's data on one of the graphs that he said that the Tangier Pocomoke Sound last year harvested between 15,000 and 16,000 bushels of oysters. But let me give you the rest of that. You know, the 15,000 to 16,000 bushels of oysters was caught not by the fly-by-nighters, not by the people that's getting into this for the gold rush, not by the plumbers, not by the contractors that's got free time and get to put a rig on their boat and go out and do it. They're caught by the people like me, the people that need this. This is not a luxury for me. This is not bonus money for me. This is what I need. This is my living. I'm too green to go to college, too stuck in my ways to change anything else. This is what I need. And what Jim is not telling you, and I want you to ask him this when I get done or whenever the public comment part is open. Can I walk up to this? Is it legal for me to walk up to this? All right, don't shoot me now.
But shout.
What Jim's not telling you is he's mainly talking about this part up here. This is the part that Jim is talking about below spat set. What he's not telling you is from this part the whole way down, I've been doing this since 99. That's when I started, back in 1999. From this down here, it's not been, the oysters have never been so plentiful. One year
we had one place here to Marshall's. That's a rock in about this area.
One time we've had oysters so thick that it was considered great oystering by our standards. That's never been a place for strike. GM's not giving us, he's not splitting up the two areas into three. And to be completely blunt, this area here is connected to a place here called Johnson's. This is in the Tangier sign. He's given us Johnson's, and for the rest of it, it don't like much of being nothing. The shells are gone. Jim has spent a lot of money to Parker's. He has planted good shells. This debate has went on in SMAC. Mr. Erskine can tell you. I'm sure Miss Haney or Miss Kellum has heard it. There are fossil shells. There are house shells. He has planted both shells there. I don't know why, but it hasn't taken off. It's been done. It hasn't taken off like the other areas have. So it's not that if you split this up in thirds, it is. You're not really. It's not. It's not only splitting it up in thirds, but this area one, Johnson is going to get killed. It's going to get killed in a matter of 2 weeks' time because there's nothing else on these areas to amount to anything. That's where every boat in the fleet is going. Last year, what didn't make the public scene, some of you might know this, some of you might not, after all the SMAC meetings, after the big political gurus come and put their 2 cents in and you know, the commission revoked that 20-day thing, Jim went back and he done the survey, which he annually does. I called him up, I seen him while I was fishing my pots, and I called him up, I said, Jim, how's it look? He said, it's so bad that I want to shut Pocomoke down this year because there's no oysters there. That was his words. I called Mr. Bull. I called Rob. I'm sure Rob didn't enjoy it much, but I called him anyway. But I called this, and I said, look, SMAC's all done. The commission has voted, and now he's going to come back to the commission with no SMAC meeting, with nothing else, to try to close down Pocomoke. Well, that didn't happen because of the legalities. Based on that, GM wanted to shut it down because there were no oysters. I took the sample of three boats. One was myself and two other ones. Just took three that I knew worked at the Pocomoke some. One boat worked the Pocomoke 17 days and caught 251 bushels. Another one worked there 11 days and caught 119 bushels. Myself, I worked there 7 days and caught 112 bushels. At $40 a basket, that hardly seems like nothing. Doesn't seem like nothing. That has a value of $19,000. At $40 a basket, it has a value of $19,280. That's not counting what our volley boat in the creek makes. That's not counting what the packers make, the employees there, this, that, and the other. That's just what the oysterman gets paid. That was just three boats. There were quite a few more boats from Tangier that went to the Pocomoke. There were some from the Eastern Shore. Scott worked to the Eastern, worked out of the Eastern Shore quite a bit last winter. This is a drastic move. When I come to these meetings, as I told you before, I usually don't come to this. I usually call in to the CMAC, SMAC meetings. And I hope that I leave that disimpression on you all. When I come to these meetings, I don't come to you all with a selfish heart. I come to you all talking for our fleet, for our island. This is going to hurt Tangier. Not only because of the areas, the time that this is open here, this one more than any of them, you're shoving us down the bay somewhere. This will not last. This will not make it. That not only affects the oystermen, that affects our oil dock, that affects our grocery stores, that affects our community as a whole, and as VMRC, according to the code, you are not just to take the scientific route, you are to take in the social and economic things. And I know the grocery stores is beyond your jurisdiction. I'm not saying that. But I'm just telling you that that's how I come to you in a whole. I hope sometimes that you all, or I hope this time, I give this to Rob a lot. Rob has heard this probably. I've said it to him out in the hallway. Sometimes we as people, you as decision makers, you as people who have the livelihoods, the lives, the things of our lives in your hands, you have to make decisions. But sometimes you have to take your eyes off the paper. All the answers aren't on Jim's paper. All the answers are not on paper. Sometimes we have to take our eyes off the paper and look at what reality is. We have to look at what's really going on. A two-year rotation we are fine with. And I hope that this is a drastic move. I hope you take this serious. I heard the gentleman on the end telling you all to look deep down. I want you all to look deep down. And not just look at what Jim's paper is saying, but look at what you could do to a community, to several communities, to Saxes. I want you all to look deep down and take the whole picture into hand. Take the whole picture and wrap it up in your mind, and because this is a decision that affects lives. And I thank you all for your time, and I hope that I've done, as Paul Harvey used to say, I hope I've given you the rest of the story.
Mr. Kirk.
Commissioner, board members, Kent Carr, been commercial waterman all my life since 12, 13 years old. I want to give thanks to Dan. I've been in a lot of meetings and heard him on the phone a whole lot. And his dad has been in this. Y'all need to respect what that man just said to y'all. It's a lot of livelihood over Eastern Shore. They don't have a whole lot to rely, fall back on like we do on the Western Shore. But that means putting a lot of time for the watermen on the Eastern Shore. And he deserves a lot of credit from those people, too. All right, getting into what I'm saying, need to say, is we're going on a limit, limiting the oystermen. I look back at a picture I got in Minchville back in the 70s when Minchville old store was there and the new store was there. We just purchased the buyboat from Mr. Ballard back in the 90s. And there was 175 boats in Minchville at that, on that picture. I sat down and counted them. There's two or three deck boats there loading. And we do have a problem with a lot of watermen getting in on this situation. And it's got to be solved. But putting us on a limit and cutting out people working, it's other areas that can solve this problem other than cutting back the watermen, cutting back working, and such things as opening up new oyster grounds that haven't been worked. Going back to shutting down Mobjack last year because it was too much strike was not a very good situation, and I'm going to explain why. You got a shell with 100 oysters struck on it. If you work that shell and cultivate it, it's going to be better that next year. You might kill 75 of those oysters, but 25 of them will be knocked off and grow to be mature, good oysters the next year. And if you don't cultivate it, it's like a garden. It's not going to grow. It's not going to produce. And not letting us work Pulse's Bar last year is putting us in the same situation. You've got grounds in Pocosin where it's a lot of Pocosin watermen. You've got grounds, Saxes, Eastern Shore, them rivers up there that aren't open. We need to focus on opening new places where you can have more oystermen and you can have more production out of the state. It gets down, not cutting any of the bigger buyers down because I'm a smaller buyer and I respect all of the major buyers because at times they've helped me out and at times I've helped them out. But narrowing it down, you're not going to get any smaller people in the oyster business, which you do need to have for processing plants. You have the bigger outfits. And when you got less boats, the smaller people, it's not any opportunity for the smaller business to grow or to get into the business because you take, like last year, most of the oysters were bought by a couple of oyster companies. But it wasn't that many oysters to be bought, even though it was one of the best seasons we've had. But you didn't have so many oystermen, and y'all keep cutting back on the oystermen. And that's not – back in the 60s, it was 175 boats in Minchville in the 70s and 80s. And now you're cutting back to 600. It's other ways to solve this problem than the route we're going on cutting working people out. You need to produce more jobs, more oyster houses, let more oysters go up the road, and that in turn puts in more businesses, supplies more truck drivers, more grocery stores, more income tax money, because every time you go buy something from the grocery store, you pay taxes on it. And, you know, and cutting back on our limits, it's just getting to be where the cutbacks are going to put us out of business. And I'm feeling major effects on that from last year. And this year, the cutbacks and the restrictions are getting you to the point where you're debating whether to even stay in the business because your overhead is killing you. On every time you turn around, you're adding a new fee to your license. I think when I came down here last year to buy my family licenses, it was like $2,370 I paid out just for licenses for my two nephews, my dad, which is 88 years old, and myself. You get a bad year where it's not a whole lot of oysters around, this plan that y'all are presenting is going to be doomed. It's not going to be enough for oystermen. They're not even going to be able to make enough to afford to pay the license. If you have a bad year like it was back in the 90s and it's just 15 years ago, me and other watermen were saying that you'll never see this business come back. And you look, we've had the best strike in the world. And to make the oyster business be better, you've got to work it.
And if you got a shell that's got all those oysters on it and you don't work it, you're not going to single them up and make productive oysters. All you're going to have is a cluster of what we call coon oysters, which is no good. And the bushel limit, you've got to catch enough product to be able to compete with other states. The Gulf is catching a washing now. And those guys, if Katrina's hit, there's two or three other things that, bad things that have happened to them that's made us pull through on situations in years. And this year, the same way, if we haven't had that rain and stuff down there, the marketing situation on the oysters would be bad this year. Because you got so many oysters down there, and it's hard for us to compete on a 6 or 8 bushel limit when those guys can catch a plenty of oysters. And it just needs to be re-looked at. Instead of regulating and cutting us out of work, let's try to solve the problem by other means and routes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carr. I correct the record in one respect. This commission has not raised any license fees for at least 11 years. The last time was 2005.
I sort of disagree with you on that, Captain, because I never paid to have an oyster license. The fees on that's gone up, and the fees...
The $300 user fee was instituted by the Virginia General Assembly, not this commission.
Ms. Margaret Ramsey of Bevin's Oyster Company. Well,
you got her name wrong, but it was approved by the Virginia General Assembly. It's not something this commission did. That was the General Assembly's action.
Can I speak my opinion over that matter?
I don't see how it's pertinent at the moment. I'm just correcting the record for when you said your fees keep going up and up and implied it was from this commission. It's not.
Ramsey pulled the wool over BMRC's eyes.
We had nothing to do with this. The agency had nothing to do with it, Ken. BMRC has no authority over the General Assembly. Please come forward, sir.
Bill Bailey, Sykes's.
Welcome back.
Here again. Can we bring the chart up there where you had the bushel catch of 2015? I say Mr. Wilson's method is flawed. The reason why I say that, the Sykes' area said there was no arson there last year. 16 days, 19,447 bushels. Same meeting. He said, my Jack Bay had a lot of strike, which the other boy said it was, but he said there's enough marketable arsons there for people to go to work on. Look what they caught, 600 bushels. To me, that's flawed. I mean, it's black and white. Everybody in here says it's more archers than what he says it is. I guess everybody's wrong. But if you believe that chart, he's right, we're wrong. That's all I got to say.
I'm sorry. I apologize earlier, Mr. Bull. I wanted to talk about Mr. Hessel. You're in your meeting. I understood that your meeting was on the August 16th, and the letter was dated for the 17th. So that's the only thing I wanted to clarify when you all were talking about that.
Yeah, I sat down with him for 3 hours. Maybe I misstate the date because they blur together.
I know. So I didn't know if the dates made a difference when you all spoke.
He had already had the letter drafted up.
Okay. In June, I was privileged to join a group of watermen, Gordon Hessel, John Bull, and Molly Ward, Secretary of Natural Resources, in an informal meeting at Fort Monroe in Hampton. Ms. Ward asked us a very important question. If you were me, what would you do? Today, I asked myself the question, if I were you, what would I do? Because of the information presented last month, combined with testimony from various watermen today, if I were in your position, I would be asking a lot more questions, because the data presented by staff and the expertise of the veteran watermen just don't add up. How come the oysters seem to be striking on every single thing? From clothing, gloves, yes, underwear, pliers, fishing poles, the aquaculture cages, farm-raised oysters, number two jimmies. They're striking on inside bilge pumps on boats, but not striking on public oyster ground. Shells are being planted, right? Is it the type of shell? What is the data from the shells being planted? Where's the success rate from those shells? The comments made by staff saying the dredges are tearing up the rocks. Is it because of the number of dredges that are on the rocks? Then why not open more area? Why overload one area? Why do the Hampton Roads area watermen flock to the Rappahannock when the James is open and in a much larger area? Is eliminating the full-time watermen in the best interest of the seafood industry in Virginia? What effect will it have on the economy, tourism, restaurant owners, vineyards, and so forth? There are too many gaps in the data presented by staff. If it were me, I'd make a motion not to take action today and request further data by a working team of experienced watermen, VIMS, and VMRC staff to document every single day from the months of October, November, and December to gain better science and numbers and knowledge. I would also request that this would be done with each oystering gear method, hand scrape, dredge, patent tong, and shaft tong. I would request that the SMAC committee meet within the next 2 weeks and work with the watermen's associations and me to select watermen that have the means to accommodate such an immediate decision. Now let's change the roles for a minute. If you were to ask me questions, like Ms. Rose, why should we? Well, here's my answer. None of the watermen today have a diploma in this industry. And what I mean by that is, in order to be considered an expert, you need a PhD in the field you have studied. For instance, a veterinarian has a PhD in order to care for animals. A marine biologist has a PhD so they can study and give their expert advice in science and nature. But a waterman receives their training from tradition, their father, their brother, their uncle, their cousin. The commercial watermen are overlooked because of that. Believe me, I earned my commercial card and my spot on that call table as if I were in boot camp in military training. My diploma was my father, my brother, patting me on the back and saying, "You did good, a job well done." My point being is that when you have 90% or more of the oystermen saying the exact same thing, it goes against the data presented, then I do question who's the expert. These watermen don't converse on a daily basis. They're not exactly buddy-buddy. And they're too far apart to be neighbors. I go looking for answers. I engage in conversations with people from all around. It gives me a better understanding of what's going on. My best conversation to date has been with a world-renowned doctor, a marine biologist. I don't seek answers pertaining to crabs from someone who hasn't crabbed. I don't seek answers pertaining to what's the best lure to use from someone who's never sport fished. I certainly don't seek answers about my health from a cashier at a convenience store. Being a waterman myself, I have witnessed over the past 2 years the vast strike in the Chesapeake Bay. Why? Why 3 years ago when I was waiting at the docks to help unload 17 boats of oysters from their boats, I never saw the spat like I do today? The pictures I take today are from cell phones or from my high-powered digital camera, and they're one of our greatest assets. It provides you with date, time, and location. Since I'm a photographer, I have plenty. So do a lot of the other commercial watermen. On August 16th, my brother and I and his worker, T. Paul, we looked at five shells that we had planted on my brother's private shore on the Rappahannock River. Those shells that we looked at were planted on May 19th, according to my cell phone data and video. And when we looked at them, it was August 16th, and I have pictures of them. All of them had a substantial amount of strike on them. Two oysters, though, out of the five, stood out. On a 3-inch shell, one had 51 strikes, total on both sides. The other shell, however, had 13 strikes on the outer part of the shell, but on the inside of the shell, not one strike. The reason being, it had fossilized, according to the doctor. Yes, I have video and pictures proving my data. Another answer is that I know that we can start working together. Mr. Bull and myself have had some wonderful conversations on how we can do this, and I feel very confident that we are both in the same page as far as the future of the Chesapeake Bay, and believe me, his efforts to work with the watermen are highly appreciated. I studied drafting and design in college. When I was married, my ex-husband has been in construction for 18 years. When a homeowner called and had a list of problems, he would go to their house and look at them. If the roof was leaking, he wouldn't just patch it. He'd find the source of the leak and fix it. If the walls started cracking, he wouldn't just paint over them. He would look at the foundation to see where the root cause was coming from. Quality versus quantity. That same method applies here, folks. There is a problem. Let's work together finding the cause, joining together, and fixing it. The Band-Aids don't last forever. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard? Mr. Clerk.
I won't take much of your time. Everybody's tired and wants to go home. The data, Dr. Wesson said that the harvest in last year was down slightly. Well, part of that, I think, is because they only opened 9 and 10 for 16 days. That's all they worked. So that means the harvest is going to be down. They cut the days back to 4 days a week. Again, the harvest is going to be down. I want to know about one thing about the people with revocation. How are you going to handle that as far as, are they going to be allowed to get their oyster license? They have to pay a user fee. After the revocation, they get their license back. How is that going to be handled? If you don't open Pocomoke Sound this year, you have to pay a user fee just to keep your license, you're paying $300 for nothing if they don't open something. If you don't want to go somewhere else, I don't go over to James River or anything. So that's the only thing. If you got to have that user fee and you don't work, you still got to pay it. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Melanie Bailey from Saxes. I just have a quick question. My father-in-law passed away this past September. He had been a waterman all of his life. In 2015, he did not get the user fee because he was ill. He left his license to our daughter. She got everything transferred over this year, but she was unable to pay the user's fee at the time because there was a freeze. So I want to know, is she still able to pay the user fee and be in part of it since, you know, his license were left to her?
That's a very good question.
And, you know, from my definition of immediate family, from what I've looked, it includes grandparents.
So, has staff considered any of that?
Now that I've heard it. Well, there's going to be transferability.
Yep.
Yes.
So, a little bit of this would depend on the amount of days worked.
Oh,
if the commission passes something along the lines of transferability, then it would be a situation where that could be transferred in the fact. The one thing that, that has happened with the current licenses and other
licenses. Yes, she got his, you know, his fishing and everything, but because
Mr.
it was
Hall
a
may
freeze.
Have a comment, though.
Yeah, you said that he didn't pay the fee, though, correct?
And just the, in 15, he did not. He had before that.
Oh, he had before, okay.
Yes. So 13, that was the only year he had not because
13, 14, 15,
he was terminally 15, ill with cancer.
Gotcha, okay, sorry.
The other part is, and I heard Jim talk about the immediate family in the household, and there really are different definitions
right.
of immediate
well,
family. And so
everything
you know,
I looked up, it did include grandparents.
That might be something that the commission wants to think about mm-hmm. next time around. I know in the past we've used Black's Law Dictionary, mother, father, brother, sister, real immediate family. So, you know, that might be something just later on to consider that might need to be tied
yeah.
in.
You know, that was his only thing to leave to her, and, you know, we're hoping that it certainly can be hers.
Yeah, it will.
Thank you.
Ms. Ferriton.
I know staff's been working on this license thing for a couple years now. I never received anything in the mail about the freeze in February or earlier this year and then the chance to buy something in May or whatever. I never received anything about that. I keep two licenses in my control. One is my own, one's my mate's under contract. Now, I'll keep my mate because I got to have somebody to work with me safely in these little areas where there's 100 boats. It's good to have two people on the boat. So you got to have two, be able to get two limits at least. Anyway, with this 40 days work, I acquired this mate license in 14. The mate decided to leave, didn't want to buy it out, so I kept it, transferred it over to my new mate. This mate quit last year sometime, and I've got it in now my current mates. So what I'm getting to is I got to have a crew member, and I got to keep a man on the boat that I can pay a living with the limit and safely work in these small areas that we're forced to work in. And if I have a mate that's on the boat for 20 days, he decides this isn't for what I want to do, or I've hurt my back and I can't work, and I'm going to stop, I'm going to quit, or I'm going to go scalloping or something. Now I got to transfer this license over into my new mate's name so I have a legitimate person on the boat that I can keep working with me and keep him fed and keep his family going. So if he doesn't have 40 days in at that point, then that license isn't transferable. So that there's a flaw in this, you know, in this new design transferability. You know, we're forced to work in areas no bigger than this building, and there's boats on top of boats, and you can't do it by yourself. And not everybody's a licensed waterman who's got a user fee available to them. And on top of that, I don't want all these different watermen with me. There's some I don't even want on my boat. So I'm not going to just hire anybody. I'm going to take somebody responsible who's not on drugs, who's not alcoholic, and I'm going to have it in my control. But I need that transferability. And what they've got drawn up is too risky, and there needs to be loopholes in it. I mean, loopholes taken out of it or whatever. And another issue, like I said, I never received that letter or any notification about the opportunity to buy a user fee in May or whatever it was. I thought he said earlier this year. My son bought one in 98, a license for him. Put it in my oldest son's name. When he went in full-time law enforcement in 2012, I gave him the opportunity to either keep the license and pay for it himself or transfer it to my younger son. Younger son's still in high school. 2013, we got to buy user fees. So I go in to transfer the license into his name and pay user fees $500-some. Receptionist says, well, user fees $300, cards $190, scrape license $50, $540. Okay? Anyway, receptionist says, well, he's been approved to have the license, but you don't have to activate it right now. He's in school. He's not going to use it right away. So he's done, you know. At that point, I'm told in 2013, doesn't have to do it. And then, all of a sudden, he didn't do it, so that license worthless. You know, there's too many things that haven't been looked at. No grandfather clause for people who've worked the water all their lives, who might not have been able to buy their user fee, but now want to. I mean, there's too many things that haven't been looked into. And Gordon Hessel's a personal friend of mine. I talked to him after you talked to him. He's in the dark. He's misled. He doesn't understand a lot. I was specifically telling him regulations that he was in the dark about, oystering, crabbing. He does not want this to go through. I'm telling you, that letter, he wants more time to be worked on, and it's up to y'all to really think about what's going down. It doesn't have to be done tonight. It doesn't have to be done today. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Erskine.
I appreciate staff's work on this, and it's been a long time. SMAC's had several meetings regarding this. made up mostly of industry, quite honestly. And although it wasn't unanimous to move forward with this, it was 10-2. And we discussed this at length. I guess what I've heard in some of the testimony is a concern over the Tangier Pocomoke Sound. And I just wondered if you could discuss that a little bit further, Jim.
Well, there's always confusion, like in those 9 and 10, but it's never been an issue that there wasn't any oysters there. The issue is there a population there that can be provide significant chances of some set to maintain the area for the future? And when you work, I mean, there's no shell up there. And when you work in the densities that we have up there, and, yeah, you do see an occasional shell that's got a bunch of spat on it, and those of us that do surveys, you know, you wonder if these larvae are holding hands together, and you get 5 on a case. I mean, how does it end up that you see one shell every so often that has 10 on it, and then you go acres and acres with nothing? You know, why do they come together? And that's what you see up there, just an occasional one. And when you do it by meter, and you have to think by meter for animals that are sedentary and are males and females, and they have to spawn and they have to fertilize. And if you have densities that are so low that fertilization won't occur and you don't have any shell there for them to attach to, there won't be any recovery. And we had made the decision up there not to reshell those areas because there was too much likelihood of poaching from Maryland, so we didn't work there. And you know, we're in the same situation right now. I don't know why Pocomoke has disappeared the way it has on a per meter basis. They can go out. It's not denying you can't go out there and you can't catch your limit. It's just that the density is so low that eventually you will get to the point very quickly that area will never come back. And so it's just a matter of, and I know what Dan's talking about dividing the areas up. And I know that there are areas that do better than the others, and that is an issue. And that's why when we initially set up the two areas for a rotation, we were more comfortable with having a little bit in the top and a little bit at the bottom in both of them. But it's certainly as low as Roger and I have seen up there since we started. And it's just a matter of how low do you want to go before you try to make a management decision that may reverse the situation.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Mr. Erskine.
Thank you, Jim. I'm wondering if or what your thought on postponing that part of the staff recommendation with Tangier Pocomoke and asking SMAC to look at that, and what kind of impact do you think that might have?
I mean, if we look at it,
I'm sorry, returning to status quo. Returning to status quo. Where, yeah. You know where we are.
I mean, I don't know what we don't have anything new to offer. So.
Okay, thank you.
There are other questions from the commission. Mr. Hill.
Yeah, and of course this is totally outside my bailiwick, this whole thing. It's still the Tangier Pocomoke. With the new divisions, the new proposed division, I guess what I was hearing was more worry about the Area 1 being not a good area. But for this year, we're really talking about opening Area 2.
Right.
So
Area 1, when it comes back around, and by going to a 3-year rotation, it's actually you're going to give it 2 years to accumulate from where we are now, because Area 1 was what was open, as opposed to if we keep Area 1 and 2 together like it is now, then we'll be right back there next year. If you keep it the way it is, you just know that that there's something going on in Pocomoke that's different, and it's partly because Maryland, if you talk to them, they have definitely probably over-harvested their side. That's why they want to come on our side so much, is that they used to have just a patent dong fishery up there, Then they switched to the dredge fishery, and they have worked that area down without getting any spats out. And it could have been that that area is where our spat came from. It could be that 9 and 10 was where our spat set came from, because initially when we did the restoration in Tanager Pocomoke, we had excellent sets in that part of Pocomoke that were actually closed now. But it is, over the past 4 years, it has just totally gone away. And it wouldn't be any different if that was happening somewhere else. We'd be making the same recommendation for another area.
We listened politely. We didn't scoff. We didn't comment. Please behave. Mr. Tanker.
Yes, Jim, what do you say to the slide when we look at 16 days for the amount that we got for last year? Does that corroborate with what you...
I mean, when you compare it to Mobjack, you're comparing an area that's got 20 acres to an area that's got probably 1,000. So they're not comparable in that way.
Right.
But, you know, we knew they would catch oysters, but the problem is everyone knows a big oyster, and there truly are not. I have the stock assessment I can go find if you want to see if it went up there. When those are gone, there's just less there every year. And, you know, you may want to ask Roger's opinion on it, but we work together on all these things, and this is, of all the area that we look at in the bay, this is the lowest one that we got right now. And, you know, we can hold things status quo and keep the area open, but you know that since we didn't get a great set there last year, and the one area in Tanger that's going to reopen next year got pounded pretty hard this past year, then those set got knocked down. So if they get a set this year, you're talking about 2 years down the road. So we're going to be dealing with this Tanger Pocomoke situation for a number of years. It's not going to, look where we were in this previous year. I mean, we were at 73,000 bushels up there. And that was area two that we're going into now. That's the area that the last time we were there, we caught 73,000 bushels. So.
Mrs. Keller.
Just to clarify, what part of the openings and seasons did SMAC not approve or not talk about? It seems like there's a part of this that did not go through.
Well, we did talk about the Pocomoke Tanger one in one of the earlier meetings, but we didn't go back through it at the last one. We were running out on that. We talked about it early. But
so SMAC has not discussed the Tanger?
Well, we discussed it at that time, but not again. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Erskine.
I'd like to make a comment on the last SMAC meeting, and that the majority of that, if not predominantly, was about the limited entry
right.
And the two proposals that was implementing the control date as option one, or this proposal which was continuing the freeze. And I just want to be clear that the reason, or one reason, I guess, that SMAC was in favor of that, based on the majority vote, was because it did not require any watermen to lose their license, that they choose to pay the $300 user fee. And that's a choice they make to stay in the fishery. Regardless, doesn't matter how many days you work, zero or the maximum. So, although not what I think staff was recommending in the beginning, it was a compromise to understanding that there needs to begin to have some discussion about limited entry in this public fishery. So, that was, I guess, a compromise between SMAC and staff. The one thing I wanted to bring up about that was the transferability in the immediate family and maybe the definition of that. And I understand in the household, but I guess that definition is somewhat vague to me, because there can be a number of family members in a household. And I think we heard some testimony about, you know, a grandfather in particular. So I'd like to see that maybe expanded or maybe better defined to include grandmother, grandfather. Is that possible?
Well, I mean, we need to take the whole opinion on it, but yes.
If right now, you know, household would be given its ordinary meaning, whatever that is. Have to find a dictionary definition somewhere, but we can certainly advertise for a regulatory definition if you wanted to and actually put it in the code.
You mean in the regulation?
Yeah, sorry, yeah, regulation.
Okay.
It's getting late.
Thank you. Okay.
More comments, more thoughts? Standing motion. Mr. Bell.
Can you address for me one more time, just simplistically, what you're recommending for Tangier Pocum Oak, and what's different about that than what would be kind of status quo and expected?
This is status quo that would open this area. Area 1 was open last year, and Area 2 would be opening this year, where the majority of the stocks that are showing a healthy signal of having spat small and markets are here, where this one, this part of it in Pocomo Sound doesn't have any spat set, just a few smalls left and a few markets left. And then the in order to rearrange it, Area 2 would get expanded to this, and Area 3 would be what would have been opening this year in Pocomoke Sound, and Area 1 would be this part of the lower Pocomoke Sound and the lower Tangier Sound.
Okay. So it would be essentially not opening what is defined as Area 3 there this year.
Right.
That status quo would be to open that area.
Right.
And to expand Area 2 a little bit. And open that this year. Okay.
What's the will of the commission? Mr. Erskine.
Well, if all the comments are done, I was going to offer a motion.
Sure.
And it would be to accept staff recommendation with a further definition of immediate family to include grandparents, and eliminate any modification of Tangier Pocomoke Sound, which will be sent to SMAP for further review.
Second.
And that would be a second by Mrs. Kellen. So that's motion to accept staff recommendation here to modify the definition of direct family member to include grandparents here and leave the Pocomoke Sound area at status quo and refer that to the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee. Motion by Mr. Erskine, second by Mrs. Kellum. Mr. Neal.
I guess, does the motion include the wording modification that Rob brought up about the medical exemption? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is the seconder of the motion in favor of that as well?
Yes. Sorry.
Okay. Any discussion on this motion? Mr. Taggart.
So let me ask Mr. Erskine, what do you expect that the SMAC might do with regard to the Pocomoke Tangier Sound sort of debate and discussion?
Well, I think, as Jim indicated, we had a brief discussion about it, but that was meetings prior and hasn't been recent discussion. I'd like Mr. Dyes, who's on SMAC, to discuss it further, and I think there's been some input here that, we may have more input. This is kind of the first time, we've had discussion here at the commission. I don't think SMAC had this much discussion about Tangier Pocomoke, so... Mm-hmm. I think it's a big step going from the 2-year rotation to the 3-year rotation.
Mr. Neal.
Another just question for AJ. Do you foresee SMAC coming up with some type of decision prior to the scheduled December opening?
I don't know when our next scheduled meeting of SMAC would be. Nothing be scheduled. So it would be status quo for this year, 2016-17.
I mean, we are having the SAV meeting that will go back to the full Jefferson Committee after we're finished.
Mm-hmm.
And that would, you know, you could take it up there. I mean, we could conceivably take it up before the season.
Okay.
You know, it's just once you get into October, it's a real hard time to get four sure people together.
Yeah. That SAV meeting is September, early September?
Yes.
I think. Okay.
And there'll probably be two of them. So.
We'll have two more commission meetings prior to the opening anyway.
Yes.
On the transfer of them?
Yes.
You want to spell that out?
Sure. Please spell that out.
All right. I have some sort of a change to address the family member thing for the first line of D1. It could say the transferee is the person's sibling, parent, child, grandparent, or grandchild. And I think that could take care of it. And I can email this to whoever needs it.
Thank you for the work.
Yep.
Any further discussion? I'm going to call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you all for being very civil here. Appreciate the discussion.